Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and glad you're here. I'm glad Marlo Lewis is here too, ladies and gentlemen, because he's our good friend. He's a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he writes on energy policy and other public policy issues, including he covers the area of global warming, which is kind of the subject of our topic today, a topic of our discussion today, I should say, especially around the announcement that was made this week about an award that former Vice President Al Gore received. Marlo, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Al Gore won an Academy Award, which many predicted that would happen for his movie An Inconvenient Truth. He also, you recently told me something I didn't know. He won an Emmy for the song Inconvenient Truth. Is that right?
Yeah, it was Melissa Etheridge wrote a song for the movie, and that received an Emmy.
Right. And now the news this comes this week that he is the co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, what did they give him the prize for? Exactly, what was the terminology of the prize for him?
They said that he had done more than any other individual to raise the consciousness of the world about the measures that needed to be taken to address global warming.
Right.
Okay. And so it seems to me then that what they're really celebrating over there in the Nobel Committee are the measures that Al Gore is advocating. So they're really giving him the award because he's promoting a certain agenda.
Right.
And that agenda, I believe, does not lead to peace. And we should always remember this is supposed to be a Nobel Peace Prize. It used
right.
to be given only for people who actually negotiated, were involved in the negotiations that lead to peace, or that has set up organizations that promote peace,
or a lifelong work that impacted, like Mother Teresa, some lifelong work like her work.
Yes, and but what Al Gore is promoting really is an energy rationing system for the world.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the governments of the world to collude, if you will, to restrict the supply of energy in order to make energy more expensive. And basically what he doesn't see it this way, but what he wants is an OPEC for the world for all fossil energy, not just oil. See, what OPEC does is various nations, the leader of which is Saudi Arabia, get together, and these are oil producers, and they decide how much oil they're going to produce, you know, from year to year, in order to make sure that the supply doesn't actually rise to meet demand. And that way, they can keep the price of oil up, and so they restrict the supply and raise the price, and it means a huge wealth transfer to them. And this is, you know, I wouldn't say that OPEC is, you know, has brought the world to war, but very few people would see OPEC as a force for peace. Well, what the Kyoto Protocol and these global warming policies would do would be to set production quotas for all fossil energy, not just oil.
Yeah.
And another way to look at this is that
let me
sure,
stop you for a second there, Marlo. One of the Kyoto was one of the first public policy issues I covered in '97 when I started doing my radio show. November 97, and Kyoto was hot on the hot burner at that point in time, and even then I saw Kyoto not as a global environmental movement, but as a global movement to restrict the competitiveness of the United States.
Right.
That was the way I read that, because remember, folks, we still weren't appreciating the growth potential, the consumption potential, the impact, the global impact of India and China at that point in time, which we now have seen. And remember, China and India were never going to have to comply with Kyoto. And today we now know, Marlo, you've told us, and I've mentioned it in other parts of the show, we now know that the two biggest polluters per dollar of GDP on the planet are India and China, especially China.
Yeah, well, and another thing too is that, you know, if you restrict energy supply and make energy more costly, you will restrict development. And now Kyoto, as you point out, Jim, it doesn't impose any obligations on China, India, or any developing countries to restrict their use of fossil energy, but Kyoto is only step one in the agenda.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's the baby
which,
step.
Which, so, by the way, let's remind everybody, Kyoto was never ratified by the United States.
Right,
and
that's
some
correct.
Countries who once ratified it have since then rescinded the ratification. Am I correct about that, Marlo?
I don't know of any examples.
I was thinking that one of the European countries backed out. Didn't England do that, or one of those countries did? I think
I'd have to check on that. It's certainly not England, though, because England switched from coal to natural gas in generating its electricity in the 1990s,
right.
And the Kyoto Protocol measures emission reductions against a 1990 year
right.
baseline. So Britain looked really good, and they had a one-time tremendous drop in their emissions just because they stopped subsidizing coal over there and they started using natural gas. Now their emissions are starting to go up again because natural gas became more in the 2000s, in other words, in the new millennium, natural gas became more expensive than coal, so now they're starting to use coal again, so their emissions are going up. So, but anyway, my point is, though, that in order for Kyoto to work, in other words, actually constrain emissions around the world, eventually it has to be applied to these countries like China and India.
Mm-hmm.
And China, as you know, is building a new coal-fired power plant at the rate of about one a week. So.
Right.
So basically, Kyoto only works if it restricts development, if it prevents poor countries, especially countries that are trapped in energy poverty, from escaping from energy poverty. Now, how does that promote peace? That doesn't promote peace. I think that, you know, a Nobel Peace Prize should only go to people who are somehow plausibly enhancing the prospects for peace in the world. Also, if you think about Kyoto, if you think about Al Gore's policies here in the United States, which are, you know, favored by, you know, lots of members of Congress, these are some of the most divisive policies we've seen
right.
debated in the last 10 years. I mean, it's a lot of the controversy, the bitterness, political bitterness in Washington is because of these very policies. These
Hold
are not pro-peace policies.
Hold on to that thought. Marlo
okay.
Lewis. He and I will be right back after these messages. And I'm going to compare the state of the U.S. economy today with where it was in 1990, which is the emissions levels that Mr. Gore wants us to get to. 20 after. Stay with us. Back is 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Marlo Lewis. He is with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Marlo, give us that website, please.
It is CEI.org, and we also have a new website called globalwarming.org.
All right.
Globalwarming.org. And it gets we get an amazing number of hits on that just because people type in global warming.
Right.
We were very somebody at CEI, I forgot who it was very farsighted in capturing that domain name
okay.
long ago.
Yeah. Probably Fred Smith, your illustrious leader there. You know, Marlo.
Oh, I remember it was actually Fred's wife Fran who got globalwarming.org.
Well, there's always the female is always the brains behind the business. You know, folks, we're talking about at Mr. Gore, Al Gore's recently being awarded along with we need to remember a United Nations department was co-winner of that peace prize, which is anytime the UN wins a peace prize these days, I think that's almost as big a joke as Al Gore winning a peace prize. You know, in this issue of what Mr. Gore would like, you said he would like to ration fuel and carbon fuels. He wants to take us back to 1990 levels, folks, and this is something I've reminded my audience about, Marlo. I've done a little research on this. In 1990, our economy was $6 trillion. Today, it's $13 trillion. We've more than doubled the economy the U.S. produced 17 years ago. And so imagine what would happen to our economy if Mr. Gore had his way. If he could snap his fingers, we would be rationing fuel to 1990 levels. And so imagine what our economy would be doing. It's ridiculous.
And that's really just step one for him, because what he's talking about is getting to 80 to 90% below 1990 levels by the mid 21st century.
Yeah.
Something else that Jim that you mentioned that I think is really telling is, okay, the Nobel Peace Prize was jointly awarded to Al Gore and to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the UN Climate Panel. The UN Climate Panel forecasts that sea levels will rise somewhere between 7 inches and 23 inches in the 21st century. Now, just for perspective, over the past 150 years or so, since 1860, sea levels have risen about a foot. Okay, so a foot of sea level rise, which is really kind of the mid-range estimate for the IPCC, is nothing to worry about. I mean, we've experienced the foot in the last century and a half, and you know what's happened to property values on our coastlines. You know, they have soared. All right. So, but what does Al Gore forecast for the 21st century? Well, he was very careful in how he put this, but he rather heavy-handedly implied in An Inconvenient Truth that sea levels could rise by 20 feet.
Wow.
In the 21st century. Remember when he showed half of Greenland and half of the West Antarctic ice sheet breaking off and sliding into the sea? Well, that's a scientific impossibility. It's not. There is no chance of that happening in the 21st century. And so how is it that both Gore and the IPCC can win the prize for their work on global warming when Al Gore's estimate of sea level rise is about 20 times the size of the IPCC's? I mean, which time are you lying? You know, as my friend Chris Horner likes to say. In other words, both of those forecasts can't be scientific.
Right. Well, here's the other thing, and it goes back to what you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's no peace opportunity in what he's proposing. There's nothing about peace in what he's proposing. In fact, it's probably going to be the opposite. So if they want to give Al Gore a prize, and I don't have a problem with that, call it something else. Just say, okay, we're going to give Al Gore a Nobel Prize for promoting and fostering the debate on global warming. If they did that, you know what? I'd attend and I'd give him a hand. Because whether I agree with him or not, he has carried the debate to the marketplace, and I congratulate him on that. If that's what they want to give him a prize for, then I think that's a good idea. But the Peace Prize, I gotta wonder if Mother Teresa were alive today, if she wouldn't give hers back.
Yeah, well, as we were saying earlier, before the show started, you know, the Nobel Peace. Well, you know what this reminds me of? One of the old philosophers said that titles do not honor men, rather men honor titles. And what he meant was that, you know, for example, the reason why the presidency is such a wonderful, you know, honor is because the first president was George Washington. He gave honor to the title. And so, you know, if you give the Nobel Peace Prize enough times to people who don't deserve it, you devalue the honor. And so I was thinking of Yasser Arafat as a great peacemaker.
Who's already received
the
father of modern terrorism.
Right. And the Nobel Committee did award the prize in 1973 to Lee Duck Tho, the negotiator for North Vietnam.
Right.
And we know what happened two or three years later. You know, the North Vietnamese invaded the rest of Southeast Asia.
But to his credit, he declined it. So
that's right.
At least that guy had some kind of scruples. Hey, Marlo, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye,
Marlo
Jim.
Lewis, ladies and gentlemen, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Quick break, right back with Robert Levin after these messages.
That sure plays a mean pinball.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.